understood that every improvement in productivity enhanced their leisure, the time they would have to be with their family, to be with their friends, to develop their cultural, hobby, sports interests. If they understood that, they would all be pushing for productivity increases. We don't have that now. Why? Because every worker who sees an improvement in technology worries in the back of his or her mind, if we have that, if we have the new machine, the new way, the new saving, the new efficiency, will my job be removed? Will I be the one required with my family to pay the price that capitalism extracts from technical progress? My guess? We'd have much more improvements in productivity if everybody was on the same page as gaining from it. Every worker would get more leisure. The capitalist would not lose any profit. What an arrangement. There is no excuse, neither moral, nor ethical, nor democratic, nor logical, to continue with a capitalist system that so badly uses and abuses technical change as the one we have. Worker co-ops would be institutions that would institutionalize using productivity for leisure and not for the profits of a few. That needs to be part of the discourse and the discussion of universal basic income. Thank you for your attention, and I look forward to speaking with you again next week.
Hi, I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Donna Stein. And we are part of the Ecologic Collective. We invite you to help us celebrate the 60th anniversary of WBAI on Saturday, January 4th at the People's Voice Cafe.
Performers will be David Amram,
Malachi McCourt,
the New York City Raging Grannies,
Joel Lamby,
and Lindsay Wilson and Mike Glick.
That's Saturday, January 4th at 8 p.m. at the People's Voice Cafe,
40 East 35th Street in Manhattan.
Only $20 for a great evening.
$15 for BAI Buddies.
Reserve a ticket at www.give2wbai.org.
And you're listening to the mighty WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. The time is just about 7 o'clock, and that means it's time for another exciting edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Only bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Everybody, please calm down. I know you're expecting to hear Rachel at this hour, but she's moved. She's moved to another day and another time. Rob T. Firefly is here with the details.
She has indeed. Our colleague here at WBAI, Rachel Salong, and her program Women Fight Back, which until recently was on in this time slot, has moved to Fridays from 3 to 5 p.m.
And if you're looking at one of those digital displays, you might actually see that show still being listed as on now. But we are not that show. We are Off the Hook. And Rob D. Firefly is joined by Kyle.
Yes, it is.
And by Gila.
Hello.
How you doing? It's a very special day. It doesn't happen all that often, but it happens enough times for it to be recognized with cards and celebrations and music and things like that. And, of course, I'm talking about Impeachment Day. It's Impeachment Day.
We have a
And we have a two-hour show.
Oh, okay.
Not because of that.
Oh.
Well, at least I don't think so. We planned this a while ago.
Actually,
we found out about it a week ago. But, yeah, so it's sort of the same, I guess, same amount of time warning that impeachment is coming and the two-hour edition of Off the Hook. But we're sort of adjusting. We're moving into our new time slot, which was our old time slot a couple of times. And we're keeping the hour that we abandoned by having a two-hour show. But I imagine next week we'll just be on from 7 to 8. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. Well, our permanent forever home now is 7 to 8 p.m. Fridays. 7 to 8 p.m. Wednesdays. Sorry, I was following
this. This is what happens when you move us around so much. We don't know what day it is. But it's Wednesday. It's impeachment day. Wednesday, impeachment day, December the 18th, 2019.
Yes, just for a little longer, though.
All right. We're here, 2 hour show. It's still the fundraiser because we're recovering from the nasty coup that we were hit with in October. And the reason we have to do that is because, well, so many people got upset and they canceled their subscriptions. And here's the thing that's kind of ironic is they don't know we're back on the air. They don't know we got the radio station back. And since they stopped listening to the radio station, how do you tell them? You know, I guess we could have a blimp or something going over New York City and letting people know that way. But so far, nothing has really worked as far as getting everybody back. But the good news is we're doing pretty well. We were told that we're doing well with here's what's popular now for Off the Hook. And in particular, the Hacker Digest full set and lifetime subscription for a pledge of $100. Those are apparently flying off the digital shelves. So if you call 516-620-3602 and demand the Hacker Digest full set and lifetime subscription, you will likely be able to get that unless we run out. Hopefully we won't. Well, no, hopefully we will. That's what we want, I guess. But for the sake of people who want them, I hope you are able to call in time and get it. 516-620-3602. Pledge $100 gets you the Hacker Digest full set and lifetime subscription. What that is, it's every edition of 2600 Magazine going back to 1984 in digital format and presented as a digest year by year. And you get that well into the future as long as either you or us are around to put these things out. As long as they come out, you will keep getting them. As long as you have an email address, you'll keep getting them. Simple as that.
And it's a great deal. I mean, if you think about it, if you amortize it out, I love saying this, amortize it out. 35 years, it's a quarterly, so 4.
Uh-huh.
35 times 4 is 140. So it's less than a dollar an issue. And that's not even taking into account the future.
Now, if you pay it down early, you wind up saving and you can pass it on to your children.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, totally worth it.
It's just like a mortgage, except it's Hacker News instead and all kinds of fun technological issues. It's really fascinating to read, though. And I'm not kidding because I spent a lot of time working on compiling all this. And you find yourself entranced by stories from the 1980s and the 1990s about technology, about new services that are being offered, services that have since disappeared and nobody remembers them, or services that have since gone on to become really terrible or sometimes nice, you know, sometimes good services. But it's just if you want an education on how it all happened, how it all came to be, I can't think of a better way than to simply dive into this and have it all at your fingertips at all times. And it's DRM free, too. You can copy it as many times as you want and share it with people. You know, we don't have any of that limited use nonsense that so many other publications and services and radio stations have. No, this is something we want to get out there. We want people to be able to benefit from it. And by pledging to the radio station, you're helping this place stay alive at 99.5 FM in the middle of New York City, which I think is pretty awesome. We're here in our brand new Atlantic Avenue studios looking out over the street. Look at that. We had a snow squall today.
I was caught in a little bit of it.
That was scary.
It was fun.
Terrifying. It wasn't terrifying. It was amazing.
Did your phone go off? Your phone have the little emergency alert tone?
Mine didn't. My office mates did. Mm. I don't get any emergency alerts. I didn't get an Amber Alert on Tuesday. I didn't get any of the weather alerts today.
There was an Amber Alert yesterday?
Or was it Monday? There was an Amber Alert recently.
I missed it.
Huh. Oh, yeah.
How about that? Wow.
Yeah. It was a thing.
I got it on a couple of phones, and one of them gave it to in two languages, French and English, because it's a Canadian. I think I have a Canadian phone.
You think you have a Canadian phone? What do you mean you think you have a Canadian phone? You either have it or you don't. I mean, you had to buy it, right?
Well, I think the reason is that I had a Canadian SIM in the phone, but it's an unlocked phone.
Okay.
Right. So that's what I meant. But
that's cool,
I think
though.
The reasoning behind it, behind the two languages, was because it was Canadian.
Uh-huh. Our Waze system was speaking Chinese to us on the way in today, but that's only because we selected it. It was, you know, a good way to learn. But, yeah, so snow squalls. It passed pretty quickly, but it was just there's some good video of it that's out there just kind of passing over New York City, which I find to be really interesting.
Weather is exciting.
It can be. In fact, one of our Hope Talks, I think, was entitled Weather is Not Boring, and it was done by our friend John Huntington. And it's true. Weather is not boring. How can anybody say weather is boring? Well, I guess if you live somewhere where it never changes, then maybe it's not boring. Maybe it is boring then. Speaking of hope, we've had a deluge of people interested in becoming a part of that. And we had two ticket sales so far, and we'll have another one in January. And people are really super enthused at the new location, St. John's University, July 31st, August 1st, and August 2nd. There are so many things that we can possibly do with the amount of space that we have now. So we will be looking for volunteers, be looking for people with ideas. If you have any kind of info or things you'd like to share, feedback@hope.net is an email address you can write to. And tell us what you'd be interested in doing. And we'll be obviously updating the website and adding all kinds of features and telling people what's going on and opening it up for speaker submissions. That's probably sometime next month. So the fun is about to begin.
Right. And am I right in thinking we're going to need significantly more help than we have in the past with all this new space and all this new stuff that's going to be going on?
Well, more space, more projects and activities. Yeah, it translates to we need more people to help put it together. And mostly we need more people to come up with ideas for things to do, because this is your conference. This is how the magic happens.
Might I say that perhaps we won't need quite as many, depending on the enthusiasm level. And so we're also interested in folks who are enthusiastic about learning, about working with other people, meeting other hackers, and being able to collaborate on things that support the event. And that's a big part of volunteering at Hope. So, it takes a lot more people if it's harder to wrangle. But if people, are as excited as we think they will be, when they see the possibility, for that change, I think it's going to be, really not quite as much about numbers, but it really depends on what people bring to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Hope has been always a direct product of the people there. Rather than kind of being married to a pre-existing structure, I mean, we want to do new things. We want to see what cool ideas people have for stuff to do. And we're all about that. So get in touch.
Yes. And we've met outstanding, talented individuals over the years through this process who seem to be able to take on the tasks of tons and tons, 50 or 100 volunteers, it seems like sometimes. Mm-hmm. So anyway, just absolutely get involved and you won't regret it.
No, it's going to be pretty amazing. For those who don't know, Hope is Hackers on Planet Earth. It's the biannual conference in New York City. Biannual, not biannual. Biannual means once every 2 years. And we've been doing it since 1994. This will be our 13th conference.
Yes, for all you Triska Decaphiles out there. Number 13, lucky number 13.
Wow.
And for the Triska Decaphobes, there's nothing to be afraid of.
No, I don't think so.
Come on out to New York City.
That's right. That's right. And we'll have all kinds of lodging information as well, both on and off campus, that we'll be sharing with people. And the fun really starts in earnest next month. So we'll have many updates here on the radio station as well. Here's something interesting. There's a new phone number that is about to be implemented nationwide, new three-digit code for a suicide prevention hotline number. And guess what this is? Anybody know? No? Yes? Mm-hmm. You want to guess? I mean, come on.
I already know.
Okay, so then don't guess. Because,
no, I'm not. That's why just said I disqualify myself.
Okay.
But I'm letting you know while you're taking account of everyone else.
I told you, Kyle. I told you what it was, so I know that you know.
That was you that said
that. That was me, yes.
Okay, all right, okay.
Don't look it up, Rob. That's cheating.
I think I know.
All right, go ahead.
988.
That's right.
Woo!
I hope you weren't reading my story upside down. That's right here.
I'm good, but I'm not that good.
988 in big numbers.
No, couldn't see it.
Okay, so basically, federal regulators are setting up a new three-digit number to reach a suicide prevention hotline in order to make it easier to seek help and reduce the stigma associated with mental health. Now, once it's implemented, people will just need to dial 988 to seek help, similar to calling 911 for emergencies or 311 for city services. It's interesting, but you know, there's also something rather unique about this. We've never had this kind of a three-digit code. All the three-digit codes before have pretty much ended in 11. And this is something that, what happens if you live in a 988 exchange? Has anyone thought of this?
Is there a 988 exchange?
Well, there's so many area codes. You have to check every single one. And yes, I can tell you there are 988 exchanges. Absolutely.
I guess my question is, are there 988 exchanges in metropolitan areas that haven't gone to 10-digit dialing?
That's a very good point, because there are so many places now that 10-digit dialing is the norm, including New York City. I'm not happy about it, because it doesn't make sense that you have to dial your own area code if you're calling a number within your own area code. But the reason they did that was so that people could get phone numbers in different area codes and not feel like they were getting cheated. So if say, what's the substitute for 212 area code that nobody wants? What's that other area code? See, that's exactly it.
646.
Okay, let's just go with 646, because that's fairly easy. Let's say you got hoodwinked into getting a 646 phone number, right? You wanted a 212, but there's no 212 numbers available. So yeah, 646 is just as good. Well, to make it more appealing, you have to dial 10 digits to get to a 212 number, but then so does somebody who's already in the 212 area code. So you just make it equally unpleasant for everybody, and that's the selling point. Yeah, it's stupid. The whole thing is stupid. They should have made area codes four digits. It would have solved the whole running out of phone numbers problem. But this is the life that we have chosen. But the interesting thing is there's no 911 exchange anywhere. You can't find one. It doesn't exist. It's impossible. But there is a 988 exchange in many area codes, and some of them still dial seven digits. So that's going to be a problem. That's something they're trying to work out right now, is what happens to those places that have seven-digit dialing, and you dial 988 to get somebody in that exchange. How does it know if you're trying to call the suicide hotline number or somebody with a seven-digit phone number that begins with 988 in your area code? The solutions they're coming up with so far are kind of strange. One of them is have a pause after the 988. So if you dial 988 and don't dial anything for, say, 5 seconds, then you'll be connected to the suicide prevention hotline number. But if you keep dialing, then you'll continue connecting to your friend in 988 exchange. It just seems like kind of not a very good solution, because what if you dial slowly? Or, you know, what if you really need to talk to somebody quickly? It's not the best solution. And what I wonder is, why aren't they using some of the other three-digit codes that may be in use now, but are they really in use? We know what 911 does, and I just said what 311 is. It's city services. So if you dial 311, you'll get you'll find out if alternate side is suspended, things like that.
411's a robot, right?
What is four?
You can't get information anymore, really, right?
Well, let's find out.
Okay.
I'm going to actually pick up the phone and call that. I know it might be a fee, but it might not connect anything, or it might be blocked because we're on a PVX. It's going somewhere.
Thank you for calling the National Directory Assistance.
Oh.
Please hold for an operator.
Wow, I've never heard this before.
I guess I'm wrong. Oh, my land. Hello, this is Donna. What city and state are we looking in?
Hi, I'm looking for the phone number for WBAI, New York.
Okay, one moment, please.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for using National Directory Assistance. The number is 347-335. 0818. The number is 347-335.
Do any of us know this number?
0818.
I don't know what that number is. That's not the number we give out. Weird. And what happens if you don't hang up? I don't know what happens. This is weird. I've never called that before, never heard that before. And what's amazing to me is that was a human being, wasn't it?
It certainly sounded like one.
Sounded like one.
And I was surprised.
Maybe it was a robot. Maybe it was a good robot.
Don't I look silly?
What? What did you say?
Well, I was assuming there'd be a robot. I was, you know, just laying into the whole prospect of any information anywhere. Uh-huh. You heard me. I was like standing on the counter here. And
yeah, yeah. I heard you. Okay. That's interesting. 411. So you can't use that
okay,
because that's
mind.
Still
yeah.
used for information. And apparently, you know, that would have come in handy. We found a wallet the other day. We found a wallet on a mailbox in Manhattan, and we were trying to find the guy who belonged to it. Had a license, had all kinds of important cards. This guy was a real hero.
Construction.
He was he had all kinds of permits, but he didn't have a phone number anywhere. And we had to track him down through Facebook, but that didn't work. And we eventually found a public database that had a phone number in it. We were able to call him that way, but I didn't know 411 was actually still a thing, so I should have used that.
Me either.
Wow. Okay, but 211, who knows what 211 is? Does anybody know what 211 does? I'm going to call. I don't think it even connects. It might connect, but the thing is we don't know what these numbers do. And apparently our phone system doesn't know what they do either, because this one's just sitting around. I have a list, actually, so I can cheat a little bit and tell you what these numbers are supposed to be doing. 211 is Community Information and Referral Services. What does that even mean? You know, that's just a weird service to offer.
And from the sound of it, there's no information to be had in our community.
Apparently, I'm not hearing much of anything.
No, I don't hear a thing. Okay, well, then we'll just move on. 511.
Budget
what do you think
cuts.
511 does?
I know this. It's construction.
Message 527.
Oh, it's digging, right?
Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Okay. You're saying I dialed 511 wrong. Okay. As you can see, it doesn't really work well anywhere. But you said construction, Kyle?
I thought it was the utility thing when you're
wrong.
Dig
that's a different one.
That is a different one.
Oh, I'm
that
sorry.
Is a different one. Have you already
Excuse
used
me.
Up that guess? No, it's traffic and transportation information in the United States. In Canada, it's provision of weather and traveler information services. Except here, it doesn't work at all. Okay, then we have 611, which I know used to be repair.
That's the digging one, right?
No, it's not. It's not. This used to be telephone repair. If your phone was broken, I don't know how you could call it, but...
Message 527. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
Okay, so
Message
what
five,
that tells... Okay,
two,
you can
seven.
Be quiet now. What that tells me is that that's coming from our local switch, our local phone system here, and it's just blocked. It's just blocked for some reason. They don't want you to call 211. They don't want you to call 611. I don't know why. I don't know what 611 does. I know 611 also works for customer service on cell phones and for some companies. So the whole thing is kind of confusing right there. Okay, so now we have 711. Anyone want to guess what 711 is?
It's my turn to guess if it's the digging one.
Okay, you think it's the digging one. Well, let's find out. No, it's the quiet one, apparently. All right. Well, this is educational. 711. It's supposed to be the telecommunications relay service.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
How about that?
Man, I used to play with that.
Well, you won't be playing with it today because it's not connecting. And then finally, yeah, because we're not going to call 911, obviously, but 811 is supposed to connect you to the excavation people. Access to one call services to protect pipeline and utilities from excavation damage. And in Canada, the non-urgent health teletriage services. And it doesn't connect at all for us. But now you know what all the X11 numbers are. And most of them are things that I think could be done with an 800 number or just something else. Do you really need a three-digit code? How many times have you had to dial 811 to see if you can dig? You know, if it's a construction worker, they can have a particular number they know that it's not distributed to everybody in the world. And
I think the cross-section of people who dig, whom are digging around in the world, mm-hmm. is larger than that of just construction workers, though. And that thus it begets a number that is more universal.
It's true. I mean, murderers need to check to dig before
yeah.
they put somebody in their backyard.
I wasn't thinking that necessarily, but you raise a good point.
Thank you, yeah. Kyle. I was trying.
All I'm saying is I think the suicide prevention hotline could fit into one of those better than 988.
So which one would it be? Which number?
Of those, which is your least favorite? I have a thing about the digging because I just think everybody in the industry can learn a regular phone number. And it's not for everybody. It's just for people who are doing digging. And
homeowners dig. They're not in the industry.
711 for deaf people. That's important.
Okay.
That's a good thing to have.
Yeah.
611, it's got an identity crisis, but they should do something with it. And I think maybe in some places they are. 511, that's used for travel. And 311, we all use. 411 apparently is still in use. The 211, I don't know what that is. I don't know what they do with 211. Community Information and Referral Services. What is that? I have no idea.
Maybe that's it then. That could be the suicide prevention instead of 988 or 89 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Is 111 in use?
No, you cannot have an exchange that starts with 1 or 0 because of the way our phone network is set up.
Because that's for international dialing, right?
No, that's not true.
Billing.
011 is for international dialing. That's the other 11, actually. 1 plus indicates you're about to call
long distance
or yeah. another area code. And it's kind of a silly service because once you go 10-digit dialing everywhere, do you need the 1 anymore? You don't need the 1 to call 212 if you're in 212. So you do save 1 digit over what people in other parts of the country have to dial. Yeah, so that's a brief little lesson on the phone network.
Emmanuel, I do have an update on that 411 number that we got.
Oh, good.
As of January 10th, 2018, it was the studio line here at WBAI. There have been a few permutations of the in-studio number, but I found a...
Oh, I thought you meant 411.
No, the number that 411 gave out WBAI was the studio call-in line 2 years ago.
Okay, yeah, that sort of rings a bell, no pun intended. But
yeah, I think we were with a previous carrier, so that
yeah,
actually...
Yeah, I mean, I know there have been different phone numbers as things have changed.
But what happens if you call it now? Who do you get? I think we need to update that.
Why don't you give it a try, see if you get yourself.
All right, I'm not going to do that now, but
man.
I'm sure other people are doing it. Our phone lines are lighting up, actually, quite a bit.
It's a little outside the scope of our conversation this evening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't do radio to talk to ourselves, generally.
Wow. All right. Well, again, a reminder for people to call to pledge support for this radio station. And the number to call, I guess I should be saying, is 1-516-620-3602. Unless you're in that area, then you don't have to dial the 1. I think that's how it works. 516-620-3602. The 1 is implied. And the Hacker Digest full set and lifetime subscription for a pledge of $100. We have other things as well, including the Hacker tote bags. And that's for a pledge of, I believe, only $25, which is a fairly good deal. And we also have 2,600 3-year subscriptions. Those come in paper. Yeah, you have a magazine sent to your address. That's for a pledge of $50, 3 years of that.
I just wanted to add that the paper is recyclable. And the tote bags are reusable, so we're very earth conscious here.
Absolutely, and we have also the Hacker Portrait, which is something Rob T. Firefly is producing himself. You want to describe that?
Absolutely. If you pledge for the Hacker Portrait, all you have to do is wait for me to get in touch with you via email. You have to have email to make this work, because I will ping you and ask you to send me a digital image file, whether you attach it to an email or you send me a link to a file where I can see it somewhere online. And then I will interpret that image, that photograph, artistically in a painting, acrylic on canvas, 5x7, in a one-of-a-kind art piece that will be sent to you. So if you go to give2wbai.org, if you're into that internet stuff, or if you call 516-620-3602 and ask for the Hacker Portrait, I will make a Hacker Portrait for you of your choice.
Now, where can people see the quality of your artwork?
You can see other portraits I've done if you write on the front page at my personal site, which is robvincent.net, R-O-B-V-I-N-C-E-N-T.net. And there's even a link right there near the little gallery for you to click over right to this premium if you're interested.
We're getting so many phone calls that I'm really amazed by that, especially since we didn't give out the phone number. So we have all kinds of people calling in apparently, but we'll take phone calls a little bit later on. In fact, I'd like to do that. The phone number for people to call in to be on the air. Where is that number?
It's behind you.
It's behind. Well, I can't read behind me, Kyle. Maybe you could help out.
Well, it's 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877.
And one where appropriate, and other things in other places as well. Okay, so the story that everybody is talking about in both the hacker world and the mainstream technological world are these Ring security cameras and how everybody in the world seems to be accessing them. Horrifying ordeals is what we're hearing about. Ashley LeMay said she installed the camera in her daughter's room so she could watch over daughter's plural. Okay. Watch over them while she works overnight nursing shifts. I did a lot of research on these before I got them. You know, I really felt like it was safe, but it wasn't safe. The intrusion happened, the digital intrusion happened just 4 days after she installed it when she was running an errand and her husband was at home with the kids. Now, when her daughter, Alyssa, why are we dropping their names? If you want to keep your privacy, don't give out your kids' names to CNN. That's a start right there. It's out anyway. So Alyssa heard noises coming from her bedroom. So the child went in to see what it was. I'm your best friend. I'm Santa Claus, the voice said over the speaker, because Ring cameras have speakers. I'm Santa Claus. Don't you want to be my best friend? Yeah, the unidentified person. He just said who he was. He's Santa Claus. Well, anyway, continued to harass the girl, taunting her and encouraging her to destroy her room. Encouraging her to destroy. How does that conversation go? Hey, I'm Santa Claus, and I know I've told you to be good all these years, but right now, you know what? You have my permission to completely trash your room and really upset your parents. Go on. It's okay. Santa says so. I mean...
Santa gonna bring her new stuff on Christmas anyway?
Yeah, I'm gonna bring you new stuff. So just you got to break all the old stuff. Hey, I'll be good at this, wouldn't I? Wow. Keep rings away from me. I watched the video. Her mom said, and my heart just like I didn't even get to the end where she is screaming, "Mommy, mommy!" before I ran inside. Okay, all kidding aside, this can be a traumatic thing for a kid to have some stranger talking to you in your room. But, I think the real mistake is made when you put a camera in your kid's room and hook it up to the internet. And I know they say they researched it. How well did you really research this? Because this kind of thing not only is fairly common, it's fairly predictable. If you just look at the setup, is there a password? How is that password chosen? Is it a good password? How do you access this thing remotely? And how do other people get locked out of it?
Yeah, back in the 90s, there used to be baby monitors that you could get with little cordless radio things you could carry around the house. And that was one of the things that you could look for if you were, say, a bored person with a radio scanner looking for things to listen to. And that was, that was opening up a chunk of your house, usually a baby's room or a kid's room, to any nerd within a certain radius who had the radio equipment and the inclination to mess with you. And when we're replacing these things with other things that are hooked up to the entire damn net, and every person basically in the world could, if they tried, get access to it, this isn't maybe the best idea. Does everything have to be connected to the internet?
I think a lot of people believe everything does have to be connected to the internet. It's a strange thing. It's convenience, I guess. But with every convenience comes risk, and you have to be extremely wary of that.
You do. And it's just back to the old thing of, like, if you buy any appliance that has any kind of password on it, any kind of login or protection, the very first thing you do when you take these things out of the box and plug them in is change the password or change the login or do whatever you can to make yours not the same as every other one on the shelf. Because if you don't, then people can get into it, because there are default passwords, there are default logins, there are default open ports on things.
Earlier this week, an Atlanta woman was in her bed when a man's voice came over her bedroom Ring camera, yelling that he could see her and demanding that she wake up. What people do with this is really kind of fascinating as well. But why do you have a camera in your bedroom? Does that make any sense to anybody? I mean, yeah, a baby I could understand, but this is a grown woman. Has a camera in her bedroom. On Sunday night in Florida, a Cape Coral couple was harassed by a person over their Ring camera who made racist comments about their biracial family, revealing that he had likely been watching them for days. And on each of these occasions, Ring is saying that the system invasion was not the result of a breach or failure of Ring security. Instead, the hacker had likely gained access to the family's account through weak or stolen login credentials. And that might seem kind of cold on Ring's part, but I'm wondering, is that not accurate? Is that not exactly what's happening?
Yeah, like a brute force or other kind of password storage service that gets hacked and a whole bunch of Ring accounts then become available to people that are interested in that. There's a lot of possibilities. And I think, like, Rob's analogy is apt in that in simpler times, the vulnerability really was like, okay, someone could hear you through this one technique of scanning, whereas these are sort of fully fledged computers. So you have to kind of apply every bit of basic network security and consider where you place them, that you're putting a very capable computer that has a whole array of attack vectors versus just something that could be passively listened to with a particular scanner, right? This is allowing interaction, people to monitor both video and audio, as well as to interact and transmit comments and so on.
So here's the question that I have, because Ring, as I understand it, was conceived to be like a doorbell system. Do you need a doorbell anywhere but your front door? You know, and if it's got like an app or whatever, you can look at it on your phone and see who's at your door. And beyond, why do you need doorbells in every room of your house? Like, that's the part I do not understand.
It seems like they've expanded their reach a bit.
Well, then they should rename it.
They
because
should.
Because it's confusing.
Yeah, because it's not really a Ring thing.
Call it SpyCam.
Okay, you know what? Call it exactly. How many would they sell if it was called SpyCam? I think that's a very good point. Ring is, it was an interesting service when it first came out because, hey, who doesn't want to know who's at the door without having to run down to the door or having to be home in the first place? But then some rather disturbing things started happening, not including this. Ring cameras started to be networked together, or people started to encourage you to do that. Neighborhood watch committees, the local police, they wanted to know who's wandering around the neighborhood. And if somebody knocks on this person's door, maybe you want to warn your neighbor that some unruly person is in the neighborhood. And if you didn't agree to this, then all of a sudden you became the problem. So it became this really kind of Orwellian neighborhood thing going on. And I think a lot of people might have regretted ever getting the things in the first place.
It also makes me further question how much we need to centralize these things. I mean, as I understand, Ring is the one that's owned by Amazon, right?
I can't keep track anymore. Nest is owned by Google.
Nest is owned by
Ring
Google.
Ring is owned. I don't know. Is Ring owned by Amazon? Probably.
Oh, they got bought by SimpliSafe.
Oh, okay. Because
are you joking or what? We're going to believe you.
I think it's an AllSafe product, but
yeah, AllSafe definitely.
But
is that a joke? I don't know what to believe
yeah, what's
anymore.
Real? What is it?
Ring works with Alexa, I tell you that much.
Yeah, but we have these things now that are put out by all sorts of companies. You know, if you bought a security camera from a security camera company that lives and dies by the success of their security cameras, I feel like you could have a certain degree of trust that maybe they've looked at the ins and outs of their security cameras. But when it's put out by a company that just exists to like buy up as many different things as possible and connect them all together so they could get a more complete picture of you to sell to advertisers, like that's you know, their highest priority is not going to be fixing every leak in their security cameras, I think.
Especially in the case of startups and stuff, companies that I view them as like really thin, like having a very thin veneer of existence. Like they're rushing to create value for an IPO or some hopes of domination in whatever space they're disrupting and so on. And I think that a lot can be said about their own oversights in that rapid growth. And I guess I'm kind of thinking of an article about Amazon and a lot of the cloud computing stuff, but a lot of these startups are developed using other services. So their expertise is not as awe-inspiring. Like they had an idea and then they had all of the guts of that hosted elsewhere. They're in a mad rush to sort of compete in that innovation space, but you know, even their own code and their own work could be vulnerable because of the way they went about growing, and especially in scenarios where there's a lot of like rapid growth and you know, looking at each intricacy of the design and the overall security or how they're going to host people's video or provide any kind of back-end service for their customers. It ends up in a lot of cases, I think, being an afterthought.
Yeah, it's like we were saying last week when we were talking with Jason Scott about the demise of Yahoo Groups. And Yahoo Groups was a thing that had started at one list when it was a project started up by one person who really cared about that form of communication. Then it was bought by another company, and that company was bought by Yahoo, and Yahoo was bought by Verizon. And it ended up just this thing like gathering dust without any real work being put into it until this company realized they still owned it and decided they better shut it down before they're responsible for something.
I'd like to read the actual statement that came from Ring in response to all this. It's called Ring Services Have Not Been Compromised. Here's what you need to know. It shows up on their blog. You may have recently seen reports that Ring Services have been compromised, and we want to inform you that we have investigated, this is bold now, we have investigated this incident and have no evidence of an unauthorized intrusion or compromise of Ring's systems or network. Well, okay, first of all, my question here is, what do you consider to be an unauthorized intrusion? Because it seems to me if somebody is telling a child that he's Santa Claus in their bedroom through one of your devices, sounds like an unauthorized intrusion right there. Now, whose fault is it? That's what the remaining paragraphs are all about. So let's continue. Recently, we were made aware of an incident where malicious actors obtained some Ring users' account credentials. Thank you for not saying hackers, by the way. Malicious actors. I kind of like that. Let's call them malicious actors from now on.
M.A.
Yeah, M.A. I like that.
It's like Ma Bell.
Yeah. Of course, I'm sure people in the acting community won't be thrilled about this.
Yeah, SAG-AFTRA is going to have all kinds of things to say about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, you just can't win. Okay, so malicious actors obtained some Ring users' account credentials, e.g. username and password, from a separate, external, non-Ring service. In other words, Ring does not operate a service that trades passwords and tells you how to break in. So dispel that rumor
What a relief.
Yeah. Anyway, somebody did that and reused them to log into some Ring accounts. Unfortunately, when people reuse the same username and password on multiple services, it's possible for bad actors to gain access to many accounts. Yeah, that's Ring throwing some shade down at its users for using stupid passwords or not recycling their passwords, using different ones for different things. It's victim blaming, but in a way, it's also accurate because that's exactly what's happening. The people are using either the same password as their username or email address or something like admin or just the same password over and over again on every single service that they have. And if one of them is compromised, just one, and that list becomes public, which it has, then you can break into all kinds of things. Email accounts, cameras, VCRs, whatever, refrigerators, whatever is online these days. Continuing, upon learning of the incident, we took appropriate actions to promptly block bad actors from known affected Ring accounts, and affected users have been contacted. I'm curious what actions they could take to block somebody who has the username and password. Seems like once you have that information, you're in. Otherwise, you're locking out people that are supposed to get in. Anyway, out of an abundance of caution, we encourage Ring customers to change their passwords and enable two-factor authentication. Well, that's it right there. Two-factor authentication. They support it. They have it. they need to mandate that users implement that themselves and use that as a matter of course. Otherwise, your system isn't going to work. And I think that's better than having somebody spy on your kids.
And do a decent job of educating the consumer on how, you know, you have to walk them through that step by step, and not just have it as an aside. I mean, you really have to educate people so that they're diverted toward the safest and the wisest choice, but with instruction, not just left like with some complex step by step that they're just never going to do, because then you get apathy and you don't get a lot of take.
Well, okay, let's assume that your great grandmother is listening right now, somehow, and you have to explain 2-factor authentication to her. Anybody want to volunteer how to do that to get her to not be spied upon with these evil Ring devices? No, I guess it's not that easy, huh? It's not that easy to explain it.
You raise a good point, though, because like, how much of the responsibility should be on the company for things like this? Like, if you're a company that sells fireworks, you have to put all kinds of like warnings on the box and everything else, like warning: this is crap that blows up because this is crap that blows up.
Mm-hmm.
But like, when you're selling something like a security camera, like should it be the responsibility of the company to put some kind of big attractive warning on the side that says, you know, warning, you have a degree of responsibility for the security of this product, you have to use it right?
Well, something, I mean, they certainly send you enough information in these long agreements.
And then the booklet and the setup, but I don't think it's like a large sticker identifying something being able to have like sort of a comprehensive existence within your network that could be compromised, but perhaps it should. Maybe more readily identifiable IoT labeling.
Well, here are the steps that Ring is suggesting. Enable 2-factor authentication in the Ring app from the app's account settings. This creates an extra layer of security. You'll receive a unique code via text message on your phone whenever you or someone else attempts to log into your Ring account and is asked for your Ring password. That can get annoying. Every time somebody logs in, you're going to get a notice on your phone. There's got to be a better way to do that. What if you don't have a phone? What if you don't have a cell phone? A lot of people don't. You know, what happens to them? Sounds like not everybody's being included here. I've worked with Nest a bit, and I know they're getting rather annoying since they were bought by Google, where they want you to use your Google account to use your Nest account. And if you don't, every time you access your Nest account through some other way, you get an email every single time. And if you do that multiple times a day, well, it's going to get really annoying really fast, unless you agree to use your Google account, which is just more surveillance and Google knowing more about your habits. So these things are not necessarily as simple as they might appear, or certainly not as simple as they should be. Okay, here's their second tip. Add shared users. Don't provide your login information to others. If you want to share access to your Ring devices with other people, simply add them as a shared user. I'm not really sure, not having a Ring device, what that means. How is that different than not giving them login information? How do you become a shared user? Sounds like a possible security risk there.
Well, isn't that the same thing that like Netflix is trying to do now? Don't share your password with people. Add them as a user on your account with their own password or something like that.
So they get their own password, but they have the same ability to do... I mean, it sounds like you're doubling the security risk then. That's good for the company, maybe.
Just make a hacker account when you're setting it up. You know, you just admit defeat right when you open the box.
Uh-huh. Hacker, huh, Kyle?
Yeah,
malicious,
obviously.
Malicious actor.
Oh,
that's,
I'm sorry.
That's
I'm
the
sorry.
New word. That's the new word.
Yeah. No, I screwed up. It's the MA.
Right.
Use different passwords for each account. Okay, here we go. By using different usernames and passwords on your various accounts. I'm not just talking about Ring accounts. I'm talking about all accounts. You reduce the risk that a malicious actor could reuse credentials compromised from another account to access your Ring account. The password manager allows you to conveniently store all of your passwords in a centralized vault on your computer and, if you wish, in the cloud. This means you only need to remember one password to unlock all of your passwords. And someone else only has to get one password to get all of your passwords, too. But that's another point. All major browsers have built-in password managers, and there are also a variety of commercial providers that will permit you to synchronize your vaults between devices. Okay, you know, that's a way to go. And it works for some people, doesn't work for others, but at least it's a suggestion. Here's another one. Create strong passwords with a mix of numbers, letters, both uppercase and lowercase, and symbols, and embrace long, non-dictionary-based words or phrases. Try not to use sequential values in your passwords, 1, 2, 3, ABC, ETC. Oh, wait, that's part of the sentence. Even better, use a password generator to create a randomly generated unique password for each account. And finally, regularly update your passwords. It's good practice to update your passwords every 3 or 6 months. And that's pretty much all the suggestions. We understand what a big decision it is to pick a home security product, and we don't take that decision lightly. We will continue to introduce additional security features to keep your Ring account and devices secure. I don't know, guys. You think that's enough? What they've suggested to consumers?
I think just go back to like old video cameras with big chunky VHS tapes that go in them and rewatch those on a nightly basis.
Closed circuit. Some nice coax, real heavy cabling.
See, that's what we're lacking in the Internet of Things era, is a nice closed circuit.
Black and white. Yeah, closed circuits instead of these open ones. No, I like those tips. I've noticed even some of the browsers have strong password generators, and I've watched a little bit of that password management evolve. It's better than it was. And I think part of what where complacency in this realm of password generation comes from is being inundated with having to do the same thing for hundreds and thousands of accounts over the course of a lifetime or an education or wherever you're at in life. I think people get worn out from some of this. So those are good ideas and would go a long way to help you. And also just sort of basic network security in how you administer your home or office network is another avenue to pay close attention to when you're plugging things in.
Yeah, I mean, these things seem like great services, and they can be if used properly, but they can also really be the beginning of hell if you become victimized. I'm just thinking of the number of people who will receive Ring devices as presents this year. Now, think about that. You want to spy on somebody, so you give them a camera, maybe you know what kind of password they'll select, or maybe it's pre-selected, so they don't have to worry about it. Just install it, and right away you have access. I'm sure this kind of thing happens all the time. I'm sure there's all kinds of stories people can share.
Yeah, there's all kinds of new products coming out. You've seen the social network frames and stuff that you can spy on Granny, or Muppets or whatever. I don't know. There's all kinds of new hardware that is as capable, that is going to be thrust into people's homes. And often the people that aren't, maybe didn't want it, but, someone thought they needed it, and perhaps, they're just minding their own business, and then here they are with this highly capable surveillance device that they're not even really aware what it is, let alone that it's connected to their phone lines.
Think of the people who are part of a household or institution or something that have no say, and these devices are there. And they can't do anything about it. They're being surveilled just as much as anyone else.
Well, I was also looking. I was investigating the Ring family of products earlier, research team. And
you were shopping, weren't you?
I was because I would really like to put a Ring camera on each fence post in the backyard. But there's a whole section of works with Ring, and they're Wi-Fi locks that work with Ring. They're selling a whole suite of business products. So you could get locked out of your house by a malicious actor. A malicious actor could turn up the heat in your house. I mean, this also, I think, can be part of that whole domestic violence and abuse in the IoT suite of issues.
Interesting.
Yeah. If you were in an abusive relationship, and even if you got an order of protection against the user, if they still have access to your password, if they can still break into your IoT things and they can turn up the heat in your house, they can make Rick Astley play 24 hours a day. I mean, I'm making light of the situation a little bit, but they could lock you out of your house if you have a smart lock that's connected to your Ring system. I mean, there are really terrifying implications for this beyond just the surveillance of it.
There was an early Mr. Robot episode where a smart house was hacked and the person was going through all kinds of hell trying to get things to work properly, and of course they weren't. These things are cool, but they carry risks, and people need to know what the risks are, how to keep themselves safe.
Yeah, that's a basic fact of the Internet of Things era, is that each one of these is basically a fully functional computer that you don't have full control over. And so that's, you know, you gotta really consider whether you're okay with that before you give your gifts this holiday season.
Yeah. And be a real skeptical, I would say, critical consumer, right? Because functionally, they're going to work and operate differently. You know, humans are a bit messy, right? And so how we go about using and installing and working with this tech is it's often much different than what's idealized in the engineer or in the marketing. So don't be seduced by the marketing and the bells and whistles.
Well, in the marketing of it also, I mean, I saw a commercial for Ring cameras recently, and it was set to look like footage that was taken from random Ring cameras across the country and people coming home, and it was voyeuristic in a way, because you're seeing people coming home and reuniting with long lost relatives. You're seeing, you know, people and their pets. You're seeing
how did they get this footage?
I want to believe that this was all like actors and set up and planned, but the hacker side of me, such as it is a little nervous that they just pulled this footage from actual customers.
Oh, that footage is there. It's being stored.
Yeah.
And actually, I'm not sure where it's being stored. Is that being stored with Ring, or is that being stored on the local device? Whatever it is, it's accessible.
It's very accessible.
Until it isn't. I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, when the power or, you know, some network problem occurs but yeah, I mean, that's where I was going with putting blind faith in a lot of these things when we actually are living with them. But
and you think about like a smart lock that's connected to a Wi-Fi smart lock. I'm thinking about a time in my neighborhood. I went to go buy pizza and I had cash to buy pizza, and people were walking in. The internet and phones were down in the entire neighborhood, so nobody could use credit cards. No one had cash, and people are walking in. They're like, you can't use a credit card because the internet is down. And people are like, can I use a debit card? I heard three different people say that while they were making my pizza. And in the same way, you know, if you have a smart lock and the internet goes down, can you get into your house?
Yeah.
You know, if the power is out and the internet is out and you can't open your garage door and you can't open your Wi-Fi door, what are you going to do? You know, your ice cream's just going to melt out in your car because you can't get inside.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Build in alternatives. Absolutely.
Exactly.
And don't be at the effect of what you're building for your environment. You need to maintain that kind of control. And
you should always have a key, an actual key. Now, these fobs are one thing. They're nice. But, you know, if it replaces, I heard a story about somebody who, a shop owner who actually, really nice guy, drove all the way to Pennsylvania because this woman had been to his store and had left her key fob in the store and drove away because the system is so poorly designed that it doesn't know if the key fob is no longer next to you while the car is running. So, of course, as soon as the car was turned off, she couldn't start it again. She was stranded in Pennsylvania, and this guy drove all the way down there with the key fob just to help her out. But that kind of thing happens a lot because there is no backup. There's nothing physical that can get around these newfangled systems. So we should never abandon an actual good old-fashioned key in any situation.
That's true.
Yeah, we spoke about a case some time ago on this program where there was a local building owner that tried to force all his tenants to use a phone app rather than a key. And that ended up with a lot of people who didn't use computers, older people and whatnot, basically stuck in their home because they couldn't leave, because if they left, they wouldn't have been able to get back in. And I think they had to take that to court to get that reversed and get him to give him a damn key
to
their home.
Getting back to the Ring story here and finishing this up, Amazon, and yes, Amazon is the owner of Ring. They're in the crosshairs of consumer groups led by the digital rights organization Fight for the Future, following a series of hacks into the Ring security cameras. Whose fault it is, that's entirely up to everybody, I guess, to decide where the blame lies. But they have been compromised, whether by design or by conspiracy. The organizations issued a product warning yesterday urging consumers not to purchase Ring cameras, claiming the devices are unsafe. The dangers associated with these products pose a threat to families and the public, the warning says. As groups dedicated to protecting consumers' privacy and safety, we are issuing this official product warning. Do not buy Amazon Ring cameras. Now, as we mentioned, reports surfaced of hackers. Okay, this is a GeekWire story. They're going to call it hackers instead of malicious actors. Hackers infiltrating Ring security cameras and harassing children. In Tennessee, a hacker broke into a Ring camera only 4 days after it was purchased on Black Friday. The hacker used the camera to communicate with an 8-year-old girl, claiming at one point to be Santa Claus. I don't know if it's the same guy or if it's a different Santa Claus. Similar incident reported in Florida. Ring, the smart doorbell company Amazon acquired in 2018, has been under the microscope for months. The company has fielded criticism for its cozy relationship with law enforcement and a perceived lack of transparency. The consumer groups cite Ring's work with police and the recent hacks as reasons to avoid purchasing the device. Reports indicate there is a growing black market for software to hack Ring devices, likely being purchased by stalkers, cyber criminals, and those wishing to do harm to children, the warning says, pointing to a motherboard report on software that helps hackers access Ring cameras. Again, though, you don't need software to do this. You really don't. Again, I don't have one of these devices. Is the login, is that simply an email address? If it is, you're halfway there, because how hard is it to find somebody's email address?
Could also be a small web server on the device itself that mm-hmm. then has login with certificate or no encrypted connection from the device to your laptop, say, or other possible ways that it can be defeated just through regular use. But that server could be on all the time, or it could be something that's visible on the outside of your network through some sort of port scanning or mm-hmm. other search engine. I know there's entire search engines just for Internet of Things devices like Shodan and others. So
yeah, I really want to play with that more. I want to learn more about the kinds of things that are accessible out there, just so you can get a sense as to the chances people are taking when they get these devices. Ring is the most obvious one. And, it just seems people would have had more common sense before they started sticking these things in their homes. I'm really, though, concerned about this cozy relationship with law enforcement, where people are pressured into having them everywhere. And it's just basically, the surveillance state is here, except you're the ones installing it and having it operate on your dime. It's just as intrusive as anything else. You should always be the one to decide how much of your life you want to put on display.
And also how much you want to give the police automatic access to whenever they want.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to position it. I, again, was on the Ring website earlier, and they are saying our mission is to make safer neighborhoods. They have a Neighborhood Watch app that exists on their website, and I'm sorry about that. It's fascinating to me what they're trying to, I don't want to say complicit, but they're trying to make people complicit in this whole, bandwagon. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bandwagon of complicity.
It's not hard. It's not hard. And they've learned from the best.
And honestly, buy a whole surveillance system. There, you get more cameras, right? Buy a whole alarm system. Build one. The cost for six cameras, a full security system that's fairly easy to set up, but it's sort of not a part of this particular network, obviously, but it's a couple $100, probably the same as whatever these Ring or door devices, what they cost. So you actually end up with more camera views, on the perimeter of your property or wherever.
Yeah, but aren't you just as insecure if you're using bad passwords?
No, I'm not disputing that, but they probably pay a couple $100 or a lot for one camera and this convenient service. you could get way more just buying a regular surveillance system. Go in to a bodega here in New York or any place and ask them if they use Ring for their
store. Well,
the
ones with the 16 camera
angles.
They'll
laugh at you.
Right. But it sounds like you're saying, yeah, you can get more of this evil surveillance for a better price. It's not really the point, though. We're saying that this is something that's invasive and you could be putting your whole life on display. You know, whether it's one camera angle or 32, it's something we really have to look out for.
I get what you're saying. That's not entirely what I meant. What I meant was that you can get an offline camera system or a system that you have way more control over that does not have this cushy relationship with law enforcement.
Right.
That someone would have to physically ask you, you know, hey, we would like to get the video off of this because there was an accident and we need proof of that particular camera angle. What my point is, per camera, they're really charging you a lot more for a more invasive relationship. A service that has that kind of relationship is more invasive. You could get a lot of views of your property without being a part of any of that and have it be privately owned, like we've talked about in the UK, where, you know, there is a lot of surveillance, but a lot of it is privately owned.
You know, first of all, we've blown through the first hour of this show. It's a special two-hour edition of Off the Hook, and we're into the second hour, which used to be our old-time slot and won't be anymore after this week. Here on WBAI New York. And this is as good a time as any, I think, to open up the phone lines for listeners who might have some Ring experience or ideas or questions or other things to discuss. 212-209-2877, is that the number? Okay, so many phone numbers floating around. Go ahead, Rob.
I was going to say a lot of that same stuff, but also, yeah, I mean, it might be more expensive. I would guess that it's more expensive to go and get your own role, your own security system. But that's by design because they make these things cheaper. So they're more attractive. So their network is more powerful. So they can make them cheaper. So more people will get them. And that's like these whole things are subsidized. Like so many of the quote unquote free services that you would use online, Gmail, you know, whatever. So many of these are subsidized by the fact that the information they get from you through your use of them is worth a lot more than just selling you the thing for market price. And so it's worth it to them to lose a little money on the device because they're making a lot more on you.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why what I'm trying to describe just sounds so clumsy when I say it. Cause no, I don't want you to get more cameras. I'm just saying that you can get a really, really capable surveillance system for marginally more dollars and not be automatically like opted into this sort of scenario where you can't where data is being shared without asking permission. If it's a private system, you have to be asked in order to gain access to it, and you invariably I would say have more controls over that system. But again, it's a clumsy way
of everybody put it. Wants surveillance these days. I mean, when I was a kid, nobody had surveillance. Nobody really cared that much. And now you can't live without it. It's just what's happened to us? You know, are we on camera now? We're probably on camera. Is there a camera on us right now? Ask yourself, listeners, take a look around. Is there a camera focused on you anywhere? It might be your own computer. It might be your parents. It might be the store that you're hanging out in front of.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Maybe that's like the engineer in me. I'm just like, I'm shaking my head because I know how kind of limited what these people are protecting themselves. I put that in big air quotes versus, you know, the affordable, wide array of other things out there that you can control.
We have a caller. Good evening. Speak up. Is anybody there? There's somebody there, but they're just not saying anything. Or maybe they can't hear us. Do I have all the buttons pressed I'm supposed to press?
There's somebody there, but they're just not saying anything.
See, that's me.
Or maybe they can't hear us. Do I have all the buttons pressed I'm supposed to press?
Okay, well, we don't have time for these games. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi. You can hear me, right?
Yes, I can hear you.
Great. What's on your mind?
A few different things. It's refreshing to hear a woman's voice on your show. That's one thing.
Okay.
And about the three-digit emergency-type number for a suicide hotline, it would be, you know, you have to remember what it is, which nobody knows what it is at this point,
mm-hmm.
except one or two people. easiest to remember if it were 321, except that's the area code for the countdown county in Florida.
Yeah, that's Cheshire's area code. Yeah, he got that one.
So if you could just make it a four-digit one, 3210.
Yeah, yeah. You know, so much would have been solved if they had simply added a digit to the area codes. We would have had 2121, 2122, 2123, and we never would have left 212. But there are better options, I think, including using one of these other X11 numbers that no one seems to know what they stand for.
Well, I'm saying instead of the X11, those are not area codes. You know, 411, 911, those are not area codes.
Right.
So why not make the suicide prevention thing a four-digit code? And
right. Well, 988 is not 988 is not an area code. They check that at least, but it is an exchange in a number of places, so that could complicate matters.
What's an exchange?
An exchange is when you dialed us right now, 212 is the area code and 209 is the exchange.
Yes, but what I'm saying, four digits is not an exchange.
No, that's true.
3210 is not an exchange because those are by definition three digits.
Right, and it's also not a phone number because there are no phone numbers that have four digits and you have to reprogram every switch in the country to be able to accept that.
It's not a short code either, so it would be good, like you'd said earlier, if there were four-digit.
I'm in favor of it, but it would just confuse the industry and I think consumers, too.
Well, and we'd have a lot more options for different combinations for this particular line.
Yep. Talking about mnemonic for the suicide helpline phone number, I mean, 988 on the keypad spells out what? W-U-T?
Yeah, so. It doesn't spell much. So,
I think that's the closest to a word you can get with it. So, So you know, dial what?
Yeah, that's not really a good marketing ploy.
Yeah, nobody's going to remember it.
No. Any other thoughts?
Yeah, these spy cams on your children.
Mm-hmm.
I remember once I was at a woman's house, and she was wondering about what to give as a baby shower present. And she went into her son's room, and we could hear, all the people who were visiting her were in her bedroom with her, and she went into her son's bedroom momentarily, and we could hear her in it. And so when she was wondering about this, I said, I know what you can get. And I went and I got the bug. And the one in her bedroom, and I showed the pair of them give these as, and you don't have to buy anything because they're, you know, you already have them and they're all perfectly good. And she said, "Well, I don't know. Your son is 8," and I said to her son, "Do you really feel you need your mother to be able to overhear you?" And I asked him, "Do you sometimes feel as if your mother must be psychic? She knows what you're thinking." And he's nodding. And I said, "Well, she's not. She overhears you talking to yourself in your room. And he is old enough. He doesn't need that."
Mm-hmm.
So if people kept an ear on their kids, they don't need these spy things.
Good point. Definitely. Anyway, thanks very much for the call and for getting us to think about these other. I just wonder, when you install baby monitors and surveillance equipment in kids' rooms, when do you take them out? You probably take them out when the kid discovers them and says, "Hey, Ma, what the hell is this?" And then you get rid of it.
Then you upgrade.
Then you do something more surreptitious. Let's see if we have more callers out there. Good evening. Are you on the air? I think you are. Is anyone there? No, that's one of those. We have weird things going on this telephone where lines keep ringing forever.
Perhaps it's the snow. Yes.
Snow spalling. That's what it is.
A weather report from Brooklyn. It's snowing.
Right. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes. Thank you. you, gentlemen, so much for taking my calls. Can you hear me clearly?
Yes, we can.
Okay, this is my problem. Verizon disconnected my landline because I refused to upgrade to Fios. And in order for me to port the number, since they've disconnected it, they said I would have to do a new order, upgrade to Fios, and then I can port the number, which doesn't make any sense.
Wow.
And if I had known about porting, I would have done this before they had disconnected my service. I've had that phone for like 40 years. And, you know, I didn't want Fios. And so they decided to disconnect my phone. And I said, okay, I found out about porting. And they said, okay, you can port your number. We'll turn your phone back on. We'll charge you a fee. But we have to put a box in your house in order for you to they wanted me to upgrade anyway, and then I can port the number. So do I have any recourse at all that you gentlemen know of?
Gosh, Kyle?
There are a couple things you could coordinate with people in your neighborhood. You could talk to the Public Utility Commission in general. And by coordinate, I mean, you know, come up with another carrier or some kind of other service that does the same thing. But since you've had it for so long, I would recommend looking at alternative carriers. That is the third idea that I've had, and I know we've talked about it before on the show. I mean, essentially, that's a company that works as a competitive carrier with Verizon, and so they buy bulk amounts of lines. So if you found out one of those companies, maybe you could port directly to them and get your copper lines reinstalled to your house.
Can we ask what your local cable company is? Okay. We can barely hear you. Are you on a cordless phone? Right, there you are.
I was saying I just wanted to keep my telephone number. They the stuff about the alternative carriers, because a lot of other people did convert to Fios. I just wanted to keep my number. They disconnected my phone, and they told me, yeah, you can, we will, if you let us come in and redo the order, but we got to put a box in your house. You have to convert to Fios, and then I can port the number. I just want to port my number. Well, I want to keep my 212 number.
Yeah, I mean, that seems very shady. They're saying that we have your number, but the only way you can get it back is if you sign up with us. In other words, you can't go to another company and say you want to port your number because they seem to have control over it, even though it's the number that you've had for many years, correct?
Right.
Yeah, I would go to the Public Service Commission on this one, because just that kind of pressure, it's one thing to disconnect your regular phone line and say you have to upgrade to Fios, but to hold your phone number hostage and not allow you to be able to port it on your own, that really seems fishy to me.
Because they disconnected it because I didn't convert. And they said the only way that I could port the number is that I'd have to have it turned back on, convert to Fios, and then they would, because they need a technician to come, because they said that they can't turn the phone on remotely, that a technician has to come in and install Fios, and then I can port the number, which is crazy.
So caller, what if they shut down your landline, what are you trying to port the number to? Are you trying to get another company to set up a landline for you, or port it to your mobile phone?
They've already cut the phone off.
Right. So if you had that number back now, what would you want it to be ringing? Like another landline?
I would just port it to a second line with my cell phone carrier. I already have it set up to do it, but Verizon refuses to turn the phone on.
Have you talked to your cell phone carrier about this? They might be able to help.
Yes, they are willing to port the number, but Verizon has to turn the phone back on in order for them to port the number.
Number portability should allow you, and you're absolutely, I think, within your rights. If your carrier, your cell phone company is willing to do that on a second line, as you've indicated, that's an even better scenario. It should be fairly simple, and it sounds like they're escalating. Verizon is, because they you've made it known that that's valuable to you, and they want to convince you something that is simply not true. So I would stick to your guns as far as that goes, and really pursue it. Pursue, and if you have to, have your mobile carrier on the phone with you while you're talking to Verizon, so they can set them straight. But that's a great idea.
Well, that's why I'm asking you guys because Verizon is not budging. That's why I was asking, what are my alternatives? My carrier is willing to do, but Verizon is saying no. The only way they can do it is they have to come in, put a box in my house, convert the files, and then I can shut it off and port the number.
So we're talking about a landline here, right? Verizon landline?
Yes, yes. I've had a landline for 40 years. They wanted me to convert the files, and when I didn't respond, they cut the phone off. And so I didn't know that I could have ported it prior
okay.
to them doing it.
So you're in New York?
Yes, that's a 212 number.
Okay,
yes.
I would definitely contact the Public Service Commission. That is what Verizon lives in fear of, is being reported to the Public Service Commission. And if you do that, you'll get somebody there who understands what you're talking about. And if Verizon gets wind that you're doing that, I think they'll become a lot more cooperative.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. And please keep us updated on this because we are really interested in how it turns out.
Yeah, I left a number. I left a message on your 2600 number because I couldn't get through earlier. So you can just I'm the same person that called.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. OTH at 2600.com is our email address, too, if people want to write to us directly. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.